Hello, and welcome to another segment of Open House here at Community Media. This is the program where we open our doors and invite individuals from the community who are doing great things, putting together awesome programs to help our community, Adams County and York County, become the best it can be. And I'm Raymond Galker, and we have a great program with you today. We have Becky Vander Groot.
Groot.
And Becky is the CEO of Hoffman Homes. And thanks for being with us today, Becky.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, I am so excited about our topic that we're gonna have a chance to understand. You know, Community Media has been working with SCAP and ARM and Manus Unidas to put together a shared message about our nonprofits and how our nonprofits help create a safe, vibrant, and thriving community, and how intentional they are with this, how strategic they are with this. And, you know, we've been interviewing Jim Martin, our county commissioners, and other people who are board members of nonprofits, just to get a feel of how nonprofits work in the community. And what we're finding out is the importance of everyone to be connected to the community in some sense to make it the best it can be. And in some of our conversations, the importance of our youth in our community has come up, and the concern for our youth in such a complicated time period. First, it's complicated being a child, a young person, but I think, you know, in the digital age and such, you know, the complexities are a little bit different than it was when we grew up.
Yes.
So we get a chance to talk about all that.
We do.
But first of all, tell us about Hoffman Homes.
Yes. So I love how you talked about the strategic and the methodical planning, because for us, I feel that that is where we were founded. Our history is actually a beautiful story. It started back in 1905. George and Agnes Hoffman approached the Reformed Church where they were members, and they had stated they wanted to give 192 acres of their land to create an orphanage. But they didn't want it to be just any normal orphanage that existed during that time. They really wanted it to be one where the individuals were receiving individual care and support and love. And they really wanted it to have a Christian influence where they were able to learn certain skills to be able to then be a contributing member of the society. So they wanted them to learn, you know, household work. They wanted to teach them to farm. They wanted to teach them various trades so that at the time when they were to leave, they would be able to be successful. And so we officially started, got our charter granted June 24th of 1910, and we started working with children at that time. And for the first 50 years, we served 425 boys and girls in that orphanage, which astounded me when I read that. I mean, that's just so many individuals. When you think about back then, the population wasn't what it was today. So to say 425 is incredible.
Were they mostly individuals from this area?
Not all. There were a lot, but you also had, they would take them from all over the country. You know, and at this time, the Social Security Act was different, and in some ways it wasn't even existing until 1935, but you had women who maybe had lost their spouse in war, and they couldn't take care of their children. And so a lot of orphans at that time were just not necessarily because of abandonment, but because the caregiver they had wasn't able to provide for them. So that is the work that we did until really the 60s. And then in the 60s, there was that revision of the Social Security Act, which allowed for funding for foster homes, for the spouse that was widowed to be able to receive funding. And there really wasn't that need for orphanages anymore. So again, thinking ahead, knowing that the population was decreasing for us, the board of directors came together and decided to shift their focus, and we started working with adjudicated youth. And so these were youth that unfortunately, because of decisions that were made, ended up in the court system and ended up being adjudicated to a placement in lieu of having to go to jail. And we did that work for about 30 years. Not a whole lot of history is written about that, but I know that we did have some group homes in the York area. We also had one, I believe, in Frederick, Maryland, and then we also had our on-site campus. And then in the 90s, that's when we started to see the shift of the state hospitals closing and discharging or pushing children from these state hospitals into the community, because understandably, that's where they should be. And so trying to, deinstitutionalize them. But they needed to have resources. They needed to have levels of support as they were transitioning. And so again, thinking about our purpose, that is when we really shifted to the mental health and behavioral health model. And in the early 90s, we felt a call to really work with that population. So we had become accredited through the Joint Commission, which still exists today. We're still accredited through them, and we became a behavioral health organization, and specifically a psychiatric residential treatment facility. So that's the work that we've been doing, and largely that's the service that we've provided up until about 2 years ago. There's been a lot of changes in the state over the years. I've been blessed to be at Hoffman since 1999, so I've seen a lot of those changes. And the reputation of residential facilities and feeling that congregate care isn't necessarily the best for these youth, the population has ebbed and flowed. The referrals have ebbed and flowed. And so when I started, we had about 135 youth on our campus on a given day. Today, we're half that. So knowing that, we again needed to think, how can we expand? There's other individuals out there that need these services. What can we do to provide for them? So I had reached out to our local children and youth agencies and MHIDD agencies and said, what else do you need? We have empty buildings now because we're not filling them. So what are some services we can provide? And very quickly we learned that transitional living for our youth at 16 to 21 age is an area where there's a lot of service need. There's not a lot of services for those individuals and even like housing for them. And then we also found that shelter services. And so when I say shelter, I don't mean family shelters where you think of a mom or a dad maybe bringing their individual children, but a shelter for youth. And both of those services are funded through the county. Transitional living program is really, again, individuals 16 to 21 that need, they don't have a living resource in the community, someone that they're able to live with. So they come to us and receive services to be able to teach them the life skills and social skills that they need in order to safely transition and independently transition into the community. And the shelter was really a resource that the county needed to place youth that maybe are transitioning from levels of care. So maybe they were in a residential like we have, and they met their treatment goals, but then they were waiting for a foster family to accept them. And so there's a lapse of time where they're ready to leave, but they don't have a family. Where do they go? Or you have those unfortunate situations where children and youth maybe needs to step in and remove some children from their family for safety concerns, and they need an immediate placement. So those were two programs that we really heard a need for. And so in the early summer of 2022, we opened up both of those programs and very quickly realized that the youth that we were serving in those programs had very similar needs to those in our psychiatric residential. So because of that, we then decided to become licensed as a psychiatric outpatient clinic so that they could get the behavioral health support that they can't get just through the room and board funding of the shelter and the TLP. So the psychiatric outpatient clinic was started in August of 2022, and we have a mental health professional that does provide outpatient therapy to those individuals in those programs, which is just wonderful, because again, it shows you that continuum of care to make sure they're getting everything that they need. We also have a licensed school. So prior to 2015, we had contracted with the local LIU to provide education. We have an education building on site. And then in 2015, for various reasons, we felt it important for us to obtain our own license to make sure that the trauma model and the philosophies that of Hoffman Holmes were able to then be mirrored also within the school setting. So we became licensed as a private academic school in the fall of 2015. Our school is called Hoffman Academy. And at that time, it was licensed for special education, first through 12th grade. We have our staff, our Vice President of Education, Dr. Stacey Taylor, is phenomenal and, again, had a lot of vision of what the school could be. So she worked very quickly to obtain additional licenses to be able to support all of the youth that come to Hoffman, because not all of them needed emotional support. Some of them were in regular education setting. So she moved with that, and in the spring of 2019, we received a license for elementary regular education. And that was through sixth grade. And then in the fall of last year, we received our regular education, 7th through 12th. So we are now able to provide a full continuum of education for any student that comes in addition to day students in the community. So we currently today have 18 students that come to us from local school districts that are not individuals that live at Hoffman Homes, but they do come to us to receive educational services, which is very exciting.
Wow.
Yes, it's a lot.
That is a lot. And the individuals who started this, who had the farm, what were their names again?
George and Agnes Hoffman.
George and Agnes. And did they have children of their own?
I did not see that in my readings. It sounded like they were without children. But certainly had a heart for them.
Didn't they?
Yes.
Didn't they? Oh, my. And when that started in... Was it
10.
How many students did you have? I mean, how many orphans did you have?
So when I looked at the history, because that's really all we have anymore is what was documented, there weren't nearly as many buildings as there were today. So they did not give a number of how many they started with initially. But what I read through it is that the need was very apparent and very quick. And so it was amazing to me when they talked about the buildings, and I think about real estate today and the buildings that we have and what they're valued at. These houses, which are beautiful, were built for $20,000 to $25,000 back then.
Mm-hmm.
But they started coming up very quickly because they needed to continue expanding and making room for the need.
And the need was basically... at one point because of the war and having orphans. But you did give a number of 300 or something?
The 425 were served in the first 50 years.
And Hoffman Homes have changed based on the culture.
Yes.
Yes. And the love of the youth is very, very apparent. And it's very, very interested of where you guys are at currently. You know, at one point, pretty much the court system would place the individuals
Correct.
There.
Correct.
And do you that was pretty much the main way that you got students
right.
or
right.
I don't want to call them orphans because they weren't orphans, but people in your program, youth in your program, up till what year was that?
That was until the 90s when we became a psychiatric residential. Then the placement became voluntary. And so since that time, it is a voluntary admission from the guardian or the youth, depending on the youth's age.
But does the jury system still recommend people to you at times?
They can. So this, you know, comes into the type of youth that we work with today versus back then. You know, we've also had to make adjustments with the populations that we're able to work with for various reasons. So we do at times have youth that come to us that have probation involvement, but that is not the primary reason that they're with us. They're with us for the mental health treatment. So probation, we say, tend to take a back seat. So they're involved. They make sure that they're compliant with their treatment. And they'll have court hearings where they'll have to give an update. The judge is not authorized to specifically say, you need to stay at Hoffman Homes. But the judge could recommend a placement like a residential. And then it would be up to the county to find that placement. And sometimes if the child is in custody of children and youth, the children and youth agency needs to get approval from the judge for any change in disposition as to where they're going.
So you're serving youth who not only needs help and assistance in advocacies with mental health, but individuals who just want to go there.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
Which is kind of interesting in itself also.
Yes.
You know, do you serve mainly people from Adams County?
We do not. So in order to be placed in our psychiatric treatment facility, you need to have a recommendation for a psychiatrist and at least one mental health diagnosis. Those are required as per regulations for the type of facility we are. So we accept youth from all over the state of Pennsylvania. Currently, we have approximately 17 of our youth that are between York and Adams County. A lot of the agencies share the counties, so we tend to kind of lump them together in numbers. Adams County in and of itself, thankfully, doesn't typically need that level of service. They just don't have a need for it, but we do have youth from Adams County at times. York County has a higher need, and so we tend to serve more York County youth in our programs.
So you have a few Adams County youth. You have a larger number of York County youth, and then you have people from
all the other counties in Pennsylvania. So our psychiatric residential treatment facility currently has a max of 64, that's our capacity, and we have 64. Our transitional living can have up to 8, we have 4 in that program, and then our shelter right now, we're operating at about a census of 7 to 8, and we have 4 in there currently.
And you work hand in hand with organizations in Adams County?
Yes.
And who are those organizations again?
So we tend to work with children and youth. Might work with, it's York Adams MHIDD, so the Mental Health Intellectual Disability Organization, which again, they wrap the around the youth and give them the services that they need, a lot of times in the community. So they really are the start for families that need additional supports. They would go to those local agencies and say, you know, how can we get the services that my child needs, depending on what those needs are. And then they have the resources and the means to be able to then refer out to places like Hoffman Homes if it's needed.
Mm-hmm. And you're the place that our youth goes when they have that need.
Yes.
Okay. And then you have some interaction with our county commissioners, or?
Not as often. We have a really good relationship with Representative Dan Mao. He's been a big supporter of Hoffman Homes for many years, and he has come out and we've met with him over some different, you know, things that we've needed to discuss. But typically we don't need to reach out and involve ourselves in those with those individuals, but we know that they're there. And when we had our ribbon cutting ceremony for our transitional living program, several of them came out and said, if you ever need anything, let us know. So thankfully we haven't needed them. Mm-hmm.
So Becky, the transitional youth program is, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's for individuals who are 16 to 21.
Correct.
That's voluntary.
Correct.
Does that person who's 16 decide that they want to be part of your program, or is it that their parents decide that they want to be part of your program? How does that work?
That's a really good question. So our transitional living program, those youth are in the custody of children and youth. So if they have family involved, they do not have legal custody or physical custody of the individual. Children and youth does. And so a lot of times we get that referral because that individual is needing some place to live to be able to obtain the skills that they need because they don't have anybody in the community to live with. And that could be a variety of reasons. The family is not capable, they're not permitted to, or they have no family at all. And we've had all of that in the youth that we work with. So we get a referral from children and youth, and we'll review it, we'll interview the youth to make sure that they're appropriate because we do have expectations in that program. And if we feel that they're a good fit, then we'll admit them. And it is voluntary, so they come in. Once they turn 18, it's a little different because now they're formally an adult. And so they really could just leave at any point. So there's a lot of education around that type of a decision and what's really going to be best for that individual, because sometimes when they hit 18, they think, I'm an adult now, I don't need any of this, and don't really have a sense of reality of what it's like out there on their own. So we really try to make sure that they understand that. We do financial literacy. We work with them on part-time or full-time employment, depending on whether or not they are still in school. We have one individual right now that is going to be 21 next month. So unfortunately, they will be phasing out of our program because they have to leave at that point. But we've been, since they have graduated school, they've had full-time employment, you know, working on really trying to establish everything they need to be able to move on.
So if there's an individual that's 18 years old and they felt as if they needed your support, they could come to you and ask be part of this program?
It's a little more difficult. It's not just walking onto our campus and signing ourselves in. You have to have that funding and that custody from Children and Youth, because that's who
funds for that. So it has to be Children and Youth.
Right. And if they have not had Children and Youth involvement before, it's near impossible to have them open a case if they're already an adult.
You have 16 to 21 transitional students right now, or I call them students,
sure.
Youth,
yep.
You know. This program has been in place since 2022.
Correct.
Seems if that individual did not have Hoffman Homes and they don't have a place to live, what do they do?
It depends on what services they have. I mean, you know, because we know that there's individuals that are 18 to 21 that have none of these services. They don't have mental health, intellectual disability involvement. They don't have CNY involvement. So unfortunately, those are individuals that are trying to find a place to live with friends. If they don't have a guardian that they're living with, unfortunately, they may end up in homeless shelters. That transition age is a real challenge for our system, because oftentimes it's a little too late that those individuals realize what they need. Or, you know, you have them living with a guardian that is just sort of waiting until they turn 18, and then they say, you're on your own.
Right.
And they don't have the education, the skills to know what to do and to how to survive.
Is there a lot of youth that are 16 to 18 that don't have a place?
I'm sure that there are. I don't think that we hear about them as much as we would, because I only get information from those systems that I work with. You know, there's probably a lot of 18 to 21 year olds that haven't needed that system, that are just out there trying to survive every day. And we don't know about them.
Trying to use their skills.
Right.
And hopefully they're capable enough to navigate
right.
that age group.
Well, I know I wasn't when I was 18.
Yeah, I know. I made a lot of mistakes.
To learn,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, but you know, Children and Youth and Hoffman Homes seems to be like the ideal match. Mm-hmm. You know, for individuals who need the mental health benefit that you provide. Do you see the need for this growing? The need for Hoffman Home to provide services for people who are involved in the Children and Youth program?
Yes. Unfortunately, what we're facing today is there's kind of a gridlock in the system, and I think that a lot of us that work in it are very concerned about what the future is going to look like, because we have a lot of youth currently that, because of the complexity of their needs, a lot of them, it's multiple levels of trauma and adverse incidences that they've experienced in their life. And you top that with, you know, the increase of substance use of guardians or even these individuals themselves. The complexities make it such that a lot of us do not have the resources to be able to provide the service. So we have what we call complex cases in the state of Pennsylvania, which are individuals that we can't find places for. The state can't find places for, because they either don't exist, the beds are filled, or the individuals like us, we have exclusionary criteria. So there's certain individuals that when we get a referral, depending on their behaviors, we have to acknowledge we don't have the resources to be able to help them in the way they need. And so these individuals you hear are sometimes sitting in hospitals waiting for a place to take them, whether it's a psychiatric hospital or an emergency room, because maybe they attempted suicide and so they're waiting for another level of care. Or you have, unfortunately, some children and youth agencies, because they can't find a place, they're having to have a caseworker stay overnight while a youth sleeps in their office or in a hotel room because they're waiting for places. So I had shared with you before we started that there was a report that was put out recently that talks about these complex cases and the findings, and so there's definitely interest in what's happening, but we're looking for the answers. So there's just not enough beds. We probably, if we had the staffing and the support, could go right back up to the 135 youth that we used to have when I first started working at Hoffman Homes. But this is a very difficult job. It's very rewarding, but it's not for everyone. And so finding the right staff is what usually makes our census. We can only work with so many youth that we're able to manage with our staff. And that's how every other facility is too. So a lot of us our beds are filled and we continue to get referrals that we have to turn away, not because we wouldn't want to help them or we couldn't, but because we don't have the bed capacity to do it.
And if you're looking at all of Pennsylvania, there is not enough organizations like Hoffman's.
Right. Right. We have COVID certainly had its effects, where there was unfortunately some programs that didn't survive at all, or they had to significantly decrease their bed capacity because they lost so many staff. But really, there's been probably over the last 20 years an overall decline in residentials for a number of reasons. And you know, like I said, you know, we've pretty much decreased our capacity by 50%, and we were a larger one. There's a lot of facilities that were never as large as we were that could not survive that cut or that transition, and so we're left with a lot less beds than what we used to have.
And the transitional use is a situation where that label, the youth that fit in that label, is becoming more and more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then you, sheltered youth, they're different than...
They are. So there's still also youth that are generally in the custody of children and youth. Now, they may have family that have some level of custody, may not. So again, you have varying degrees of family involvement and guardianship with those individuals. But these are youth that might be transitioning from different levels of care. So they may be waiting for a bed to open somewhere else. They may be waiting for a foster family to accept them. It may be a youth that had to be removed from their home for safety reasons. And so they come to us. Shelter is supposed to be a temporary placement, less than 30 days. But unfortunately, because of lack of resources, we have had youth in our shelter for a year. But the one thing that again, I love about Hoffman with our multiple services are we have seen youth transition from them. So we'll have a youth come into our shelter and recognize that they really do need some additional supports. They might have experienced a lot of various traumas or are displaying a lot of unsafe behaviors, and it ends up that they're recommended for a residential. And if we've got an opening, we'll review that referral, and if we're able to accept them, we've seen youth transition that way. We've seen youth transition from our psychiatric facility to our shelter and vice versa. And we've had youth that are currently in our transitional living program that used to be in our shelter and our psychiatric residential. So the shelter is very unique because it's supposed to be a temporary place where the other two are a little bit longer term. But our hope is they still get a very high level of service. All of our staff are trained in trauma-informed practices. So the youth that come to our shelter, they're not just sitting there, which you find in a lot of shelters. They are receiving, you know, outpatient therapy, so they're getting the therapy services if they elect to have that. We have creative therapies at Hoffman Homes, which makes us very unique. So we have equine-assisted therapy. We have horses on our campus that the youth can work with. We have animal-assisted therapy, art therapy, drama therapy. So these individuals can be enrolled in all of those. They also have the school on site. So they really get a high level of care and support and treatment, even if they're only with us for 30 days. And then that helps us assess what are your needs and can they be suited here somewhere else, or do we need to look at another placement?
The sheltered youth, they come to you also through children and youth?
Correct.
Okay. But the whole idea is that these are people who are just biding a short period of time.
Right.
And luckily, while they're there, they're able to be evaluated And you're trying to give the youth in your facilities the best opportunity to meet their potential.
Yes, yes.
And you have transitional youth, you have sheltered youth, and you have psychological outreach patients. Is that your third program?
So our psychiatric outpatient clinic is our outpatient therapy. So that right now is very small. We have one mental health professional, and it was primarily created to provide outpatient therapy or therapy at all to the individuals in the transitional living program and shelter, because those programs are a little different than our psychiatric residential treatment facility. That provides a whole gamut of services, including psychiatric services. We have therapists that are assigned to the cases, where the shelter and the TLP, the funding we get is literally for room and board. So if they need additional services like therapy, that's not part of that. So we said, you know what, we really need to create an outpatient program for them. What is wonderful is we're planning to expand that. And so we're in the process actually this week of advertising for additional mental health professionals, because we know that this need reaches beyond Hoffman Homes. The community needs outpatient therapy. Right now, the average wait time for an outpatient therapist is 9 months to a year for somebody to call and get an appointment when they're having a mental health crisis.
That's too long.
It is.
I mean,
it is.
A day's too long.
It is. So our hope is to be able to expand into the community and offer those services to be able to alleviate some of the strain the current providers have on those wait lists, but to also give individuals another option for outpatient therapy.
Individuals who belong to this program, they come to you through children and youth too?
The psychiatric outpatient clinic, that is a referral basis. Anybody in the community could potentially have that service through us. Any person that is struggling, whether it's a youth that's sharing with their parents, like, I feel like I need to talk to somebody because I've gone through, you know, a certain crisis, or maybe they're just struggling in some area, an adult that might be having a difficult time in their life and they feel like they need a therapist, that's what outpatient therapy is.
Anyone?
I would say, so we probably would start with, you know, we could take any age. It depends on, as we hire the therapist, where their skill level is. Right now, with our current therapist, she works with no younger than 7. That's the youngest that we would take in our shelter program.
And then your sheltered program. Mm-hmm. So that's staying there.
The shelter and the transitional living program are permanent programs that exist
right.
at Hoffman.
So you're outpatient. So let's say we have a high school student, and that person feels anxious.
Yes.
They could call Hoffman Homes.
Correct.
They don't need anybody's approval.
They could do a self-referral, or they could get a referral. So if they were working, say we had a youth that unfortunately engaged in self-interest behavior and ended up in the emergency room. The emergency room could make a referral to Hoffman Homes. But the individual could make their own referral.
Do you have that happen a lot? The hospitals using Hoffman Home as a place to direct our youth?
Well, right now, because our psychiatric outpatient clinic is just for our on-campus youth, we don't. Once we open it up to the community, they would be able to do that.
So this is a plan. This isn't
correct.
Something.
Correct. We're advertising this week to start filling the positions.
Okay.
So we'll be ready to go. So I mean, we have to look at insurances. Currently, we accept Medicaid and Highmark. We are also working. I'd say in the next couple of weeks, we should be in network with Capital Blue Cross. And then we would also take out-of-pocket expense for the service. So.
And that's anyone from 7 years old to?
To an elderly person.
An elderly person. Mm-hmm. And that is new. That is awesome. That is awesome. And the program where you said that it could take up to 9 months for someone to. Or was it 9 weeks?
So currently, for individuals in the community that need to see a therapist, which mm-hmm. is outpatient therapy, if they call to try and schedule an appointment, it usually takes 9 months to a year to get them in.
And that's not with you, that's just anywhere.
No, so okay. Our hope is to be able to provide that service more quickly. But again, I anticipate we're going to get the influx that other providers have, and then, you know.
You're going to be like packed.
Probably. And that's good, because we'll be able to see individuals that currently are waiting
mm-hmm.
potentially for services. But yes, we will have to continue to assess our expansion, which I'm not opposed to at some point needing to lease or buy something in the community if we need more office space to be able to hire and get more outpatient therapists. So,
especially for our youth.
Right.
Especially for our youth. So, you know, if you're a young person right now and you're anxious and you feel as if you need to speak to someone, what do they do?
Well, hopefully they'll talk to their parent and guardian first to kind of get some direction, or they would talk to their school counselor.
Okay.
And school counselors really do a great job of having some of those resources. They know what those community supports are.
Mm-hmm.
So they would, I'd be able to identify those services that are in the community, which we have locally, and give them the phone number or the information to call. They also, again, if they don't really have any idea, Google it. You know, you can Google outpatient therapy and providers are going to pop up. Or you could even contact your local MHID office, which would be York Adams MHIDD, and just ask for that information. That doesn't mean that you're trying to get them involved to open a case, but they would probably have those resources available to say, this is who you could call.
Do you find that the youth that you work with, they're troubled.
Yes.
They're not a threat to society. They may be a threat to themselves. But do they have a voice?
So the youth that we work with, a lot of them have experienced various traumas in their life, and that can take different looks. I mean, you have victims of abuse, you know, whether it's sexual, physical, emotional, psychological. You also have neglect, or they could be witnesses of domestic violence and abuse to those that they love. They could be dealing with, disasters that have struck. They could be dealing with substance use themselves, or their guardians may be struggling with substance abuse. And so our youth come to us with having been in a really challenging environment and trying to survive. And because of that, their voice gets lost in a lot of different ways. You have individuals that cognitively can't express how they feel. You know, that we have that cognitive impairment, and we do work with some youth that have some limitations. And so they struggle with even knowing how to identify their feelings, much less express them. So you have that challenge with the voice. You have individuals who are very angry and can be a threat to other people and have engaged in destructive behaviors towards others, towards property. And we have those youth with us too. And so their voice is misunderstood because it can be loud and aggressive, but that's all they know, because that's what they've needed to do to survive, is be loud and aggressive. So that voice tends to be ignored or pushed aside because it's misunderstood and nobody wants to hear it, because they consider that to be unproductive and misguided. And then you have the other individuals that, through their emotional abuse, maybe because of the things that have been said and done to them, they don't know that they have a voice. They've never learned that they have one, and they don't know how to advocate for themselves. So we work with a lot of lack of voice for different reasons, if that makes sense. And so our goal is to teach them how to have a voice. We want to advocate, but we don't want to enable. We want to empower, but we don't want to enable. So we want to teach them how to speak up for themselves and give them the tools to do it effectively, but we don't want to always speak for them, because then we're also taking their voice away. So we do a lot of advocacy. Our therapists that work with our youth primarily in the psychiatric residential treatment facility do an outstanding job of getting to really know the youth they're working with, knowing what their needs are, and then really going back to that external team in the community saying, listen, this is what they need. If they're going to be successful when they leave here, this is what they need.
You become their advocates.
We do.
And you try to help them find their full potential.
Yes.
These are individuals that didn't ask to be in this situation.
Right. That is so true. And we forget that sometimes, you know, through the behaviors that we see, because they're not all easy to manage. They're not all pleasant. It does get easy to forget and think that this is all purposeful, where this didn't happen overnight. You know, this was many, many years of repetitive, you know, behaviors that were exhibited towards them or in front of them that have caused them to create maladaptive responses in order to maintain their safety.
Yeah, their concept of reality and survival and what's possible is all different because of what they've been exposed to.
And a lot of times the supports that they have is what will determine how quickly they meet their treatment goals at Hoffman and how successful they are. Because we have various family involvement. I mean, we'll have youth that come to us that we never see their guardian the whole time they're there. They, you know, we try to invite them to meetings. They don't come. They don't even come on admission. The youth might be coming directly from a psychiatric hospital, and we never get to see the guardian. And then we have others that are wonderful, that are there as often as they can be, you know, that are communicating with the team and communicating with the youth and everything in between. And so these kids are so resilient. When you see what they have been faced with and who they are able to become, they just need people to believe in them, and they need the voice. They need to know that you care and that you accept them for who they are, and you're going to see them through these struggles.
And you have some, like you said, that's pretty much lost and forgotten, mm-hmm. and there's no change in that.
Correct.
I mean, they have no alternative. There is no one that's going to be there for them.
Right.
I mean, they're 16 years old. They're 18 years old. They're 22 years old. And they're living with the fact that they are an orphan in a sense.
Well, I mean, we even have 9 and 10-year-olds that, you know, for whatever reason, and it's not my place to you know, judge or make assumptions, but the guardian says they can't return to my home. I mean, we have youth right now that are that age, that they're ready for discharge, and we have nowhere for them to go because they're not able to go home. But they're too young for other services that might be available, and other services aren't appropriate for them. So that's another concern we have, is that discharge disposition. And more we're finding that youth are staying with us longer than they should because there's nowhere for them to go.
There's no other option.
Right.
You are the best experience that they ever had in their life.
For some, yes. And that's so sad. I mean, I'm happy that they have received the support that they need. And I love our mission. I think that what we do is tremendous. But it makes me sad if a youth looks at a staff and says, this is the only place that I've ever felt safe.
Mm-hmm. Safe, thriving, and vibrant. You know, we in Adams and York County and the whole state, we are lucky that we have you, Becky, and Hoffman Homes and your staff to be there for our youth. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you. Thank you for supporting us, because it's the support of our community that helps us to keep going, our ability to get our message out, to make sure people understand that we're here, you know, to support our community. And I feel that we're in a really great place to continue moving forward. There's a lot of visionaries that work with me every single day. And this is not, we're not done. We're not done expanding. We're not done supporting. And so it's really important for us to know what the community needs and then figure out how can we support it.
Well, you know, this is just another example. We've been blessed here at Community Media. We've been looking at nonprofits in the area. We're here to serve them, to help give them a voice. And what we're finding out is, when you look at organizations like SCAP and ARM, Manus Unidas, and others, we have highly qualified professionals in leadership. And you're just, Becky, you're just another example of a quality individual. And your organization, like the others, are very intentional and very strategic and very accountable. And your mission to save our youth is so noble. What can we as a community do to help Hoffman Home?
I think just continuing to support in any way that you can. One area that I find that we're always looking for are board members, you know, to be able to serve on our board. Again, such a rewarding opportunity, and we have members from across the state that come, but that's an opportunity, volunteering at our events. We host certain events. We have an annual golf tournament that occurs every June, so we have that coming up. We also have our fall gala that comes every November. We're always looking for volunteers for those. We have an annual charity ride that we do, and that usually comes around the golf tournament in the early parts of June, and so if you happen to get on our Facebook page, that's where we hit a lot of our social media. You'll see these events coming up. I encourage you to come to them. But also, if you're interested in volunteering, those would be very beneficial. We take donations. You can always reach out to our development office and let them know that you're interested in providing donations. They can let you know what we need. But there's always ways. There's always ways to help. You know, even just talking about our mission in the community, letting people know that we're here. It's amazing. We've been around for so long, but there are still people in our local community that think we're still an orphanage. They think that we work with, as they quote, bad children. They think that we're all boys. I think sometimes they confuse us with Abraxas and South Mountain and some of the youth that they serve and the behaviors that they experience. And so there's still a lot that needs to be put out there for people to really know the work that we do. And so, you know, as you learn about us, come to our campus. We do tours. We love to have people come and really just spreading our mission out there.
And they could find out more on your webpage.
Absolutely.
And you say it's great to just get on your Facebook page also. Okay. So what are your goals? Did we cover this already, what your goals are for the next 2 years?
Sort of. So, I mean, certainly the psychiatric outpatient expansion is a big one. The other thing that we're doing is, you can see our logo here. This has been our logo for many years. And as we have been expanding, first of all, we don't only serve youth. So that tagline, we're working on revising that and removing that from a lot of our logo. But we're also redoing our logo and our brand, because this doesn't really show everything that we're doing today. So we had sent out a survey to a lot of our stakeholders, our staff, our board members, some of our agencies we work closely with, asking them to complete the survey to start really creating a new logo and brand for us. And we're working with Graphcom. That's who we contracted with to be able to do that. So I'm really excited to see where that's going to lead us to. And that's going to be probably in the next, you know, 4 to 6 months, we'll see a change in that. So those are really, you know, some of the things that we're looking to do in the future.
What an important and amazing organization. I learned so much. You know, Hoffman Homes is very valuable for our community. And I could just, you know, it's important for our community so that we can become the best that we can. But for those individuals that you help is amazing. I mean, they didn't ask to be where they're at. I mean, it's just how they learned to survive.
Yes.
So, hey, our time is up.
Okay.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Is there anything you would like to say in conclusion to the viewers?
I'd just like to thank you for viewing, if you have watched this, and that we have been in this community for over 100 years. I have every full intention of keeping us here for another 100, even though I won't be there for a large part of it. But we are here to serve you. And we really want to make sure that we are providing the services that you need. So reach out to us, let us know, get with your local agencies if there's areas that you think that we can help with. I feel like the sky's the limit for us. As long as we're able to have the resources, then we're able to provide the services.
So we've been spending time with Becky Vander Groeth.
Yes.
And she is the CEO, the buck stops there for Hoffman Homes, doing a fantastic job. We learned about the growth of Hoffman Homes, which is amazing. You started by helping the orphans, okay? And now you've adapted to the needs of our society, and you're there for some of our most troubled youth. And you're expanding not only the youth, but adults, putting together a program that anybody in Adams County or York County can ask for help mentally with any problem that they're dealing with, and emotional.
Yep.
So thanks for sharing that.
Yep.
And please, if your heart is with our youth, and especially with this type of individuals that needs help, get on the website, get on the Facebook of Hoffman Homes, and get involved, be connected with the community. You could do it by giving funding money so that someone can do some things that you may not be able to do or have the talent. So until we have a chance to bring our next amazing individual like Becky here in to share what's going on to make our community better. Until that time, stay safe, be kind, And thanks for watching this program.